Minnesota Reads on KUMD is supported in part by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Well, it took a little bit of technical doing, but we've got Mary Casanova on the line this morning to talk about her newest book, Waterfall. Mary, good morning, and what a pleasure it is to have you with us this morning.
Good morning. I think I should give a disclaimer, which is I cannot trust myself as an author. You know, if I'm on the road and I'm speaking, I'm pretty good. I show up on time and I've got it covered. This morning I had a radio interview. I usually don't miss them, but no, I was out feeding my horses and cleaning stalls about the time I should have been interviewing.
Mary,
and
you know
it on my writer's brain.
No, you know exactly how to get around me. If you say I was with the animals, you know darn well I'm going to say, "Well, that's where you belong."
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it. We all need a lot of grace, don't we?
Well, and especially in these days. Mary, your new book, I'm so excited. I decided to plug you in at the air quotes wrong time this morning, because this new book is so, it sounds so fascinating. I kind of can't hear enough about it. It's a Rainy Lake historical drama. It's set in 1922. Women have won the right to vote. But there was something else going on with women that you've maybe heard a little bit about, but you haven't heard a lot about. And that is that a woman's family, mainly her dad or her husband, could have a woman committed to an asylum for the insane if they just didn't like her attitude. Talk about that and how that fits into the plot of your book.
Well, it is something that I just find so abhorrent that family members had the power to easily lock somebody away. And in this case, a woman could, the big category that covered many, many supposed sins was the category of hysteria. And hysteria could mean if somebody was promiscuous, sexually active, if somebody was rebellious, if somebody, had postpartum depression after giving birth to a baby, it went on and on and on. And, you know, as I was writing this, I was also thinking in the midst of the Me Too movement, if you were a person who made accusations of sexual abuse or misuse during that time, well, you're probably accusing a male, and that person can be somebody in the community who can say that is a complete fabrication and they're delusional. So delusional was another aspect of being committed.
So it sounds like the key was, if you were inconvenient as a woman, if you were inconvenient, you could be shipped off.
Exactly. And to the extent that when people put another family member into an asylum, they often ran an obituary in the paper saying that their loved one was deceased, because in their mind they were done with them and they were locked up forever. So there was that kind of a power thing going on. You know, I come from a genetic family pool that has some mental illness in it. I had a great-grandfather who he was very brilliant, and he could apparently add up columns and columns of numbers in his head on a ledger, and was very clearly really bright, successful, had a logging camp up north and a grocery store and a business. But he also committed suicide later in life. And I've looked at, like, my genetic pool comes with a lot of talent and artistry, musicians, writers, successful businessmen, politicians, but it also, but mental health issues have also visited this genetic pool of family over time. So what that means is that that whole area has been so interesting to me. And I have been on the other end of this pendulum where you want to get help for a family member who really needs to go get into a hospital and get help for mental health issues, and you can't get them the help they need until they hurt themselves or someone else. That is frustrating. But on the other extreme is this time 100 years ago when you could be locked away for life on very little premises. So that whole area is of interest to me.
And it is interesting, because we see areas in our own community where the right thing to do, perhaps, for someone would be for them to be institutionalized to get some help, and yet we cannot do that to people anymore.
And so
we see instances where it causes harm, and yet when you start to do some research into when things were the other way, it's devastating. Mary, tell me a little bit about the research that you did into this period of time. I'm fascinated by how you kind of got up to speed about the way these things were done 100 years ago.
A part of this specific research, one of the things I did was to go to the St. Peter Asylum Museum now, down in St. Peter, Minnesota, and to really go through their museum setting and really visit with the curator and eventually run my manuscript past the curator and other staff to make sure that I had the tenor of that time right at the asylum. That was part of my research, but so much of my research is sort of coming out of living up by Rainy Lake, spending a week every year for the last 3+ decades with writers groups on one of two islands on Rainy Lake that are both historic islands. One owned by Ernest Oberholzer, originally now called Mallard Island, and another owned by the Roberts family. And they were friends with Ernest Oberholzer, who is, if listeners don't know, was a major environmentalist right up there working with Sigurd Olson. And so those settings I've come to know in a way that I feel like I've almost lived in the past, because I've been immersed in these environments where so much of the setting hasn't changed. They're very much historically preserved, and so it's like stepping back in time. So it's a big part of my life.
Another part of this novel that is absolutely fascinating is, of course, then we see this character have these experiences, and we see her come out of these experiences profoundly traumatized, as you can only imagine that she would be after 2 years in this institution. And obviously, we weren't talking about cutting-edge mental health care in 1922. She is a painter, and she has enough talent and ambition to be accepted into the Sorbonne and go to Paris to paint. So then we delve into the artist's experience as a painter. And you talked about all of the different kinds of artists in your family. Do you know painters? How did you tap into that part of fleshing out your character?
Well, I do know painters and in my family. I've been to Paris a number of times. I have to admit I have not been to the Sorbonne, but none of this takes place at the Sorbonne. I could really relate to the artistic temperament. Like forgetting my appointment this morning. My mind gets so immersed elsewhere. I'm so focused on my work, and when I'm in my work, so much of the rest of the world disappears. And that can be both good and bad, because you still have to live in the real world. So I was able to extrapolate what life might be like for an artist back in that time. Actually, very specifically, one of the very first times I stepped on Mallard Island, this environmentalist island, Ernest Oberholzer, stepped into his study, again, preserved the way it was pretty much when he left it. And there was a photograph on the wall of a young woman standing on the edge of a makeshift diving platform with wilderness behind her. But what was really interesting is that she was in a, swim costume from that 1920s era. She definitely looked like she was comfortable in her own skin. She looks happy. And she's tan, which was really surprising to me. Like, who was this young woman? Not until years later did I find out this friend of Ernest Oberholzer, her name is Virginia Roberts, that they had a lifelong friendship and that she was an artist. And as I learned about her, and that took a while for me to get to that point, I was just amazed that she was this spirited young woman during a time when women still were very much constrained. Maybe they weren't in corsets anymore, just shedding corsets, but still constrained by society and what the expectations were about a woman's role.
Folks are going to have a couple of great opportunities for you to listen to you talk about your books. You are going to be doing a program at noon today via the Virginia Public Library. Now, is this an in-person event or is this a Zoom event?
These are virtual Zoom events.
Okay, and so you can, yes. We'll get some links set up so it'll be easy for folks to find the information, because they want you to call the library or register, and there's a link, and we'll get that up on the website. Then tonight, through the Arrowhead Regional Library System, there's a conversation going on at 7 p.m. Our very own Margie Preuss is going to be moderating this conversation. And again, links set up and ways that you can get in touch with folks so that you can jump into that discussion and find out more about this book. And this is going to be fascinating.
I'm really looking forward to it. I have so many images that I want to share that are from that era and also from Rainy Lake. I think it'll be really fun. Now, my little bit of a concern is that registration may or may not be open. I don't know what the final cutoff time will be. The Virginia event is at noon today.
They said for the Thursday event, they said that the registration deadline was Monday the 5th.
It's to Wednesday.
Okay. So sometimes you can make a phone call and you can do an in run around. I mean, this is northern Minnesota. This is Minnesota nice.
Yes.
I really want to go to this book thing. Can I go? Why? Yes, of course you can.
I think so.
Mary, you owe me a trail ride now. I just want to let you know you're out feeding the horses. Now you owe me a trail ride. But thank you so much for taking some time to talk about your newest book, The Waterfall. We'll get some links up on our website so folks can find some more information. Mary, thanks a million.
Oh, thank you, Lisa. I really appreciate it. You have a great day.
You too. Mary Casanova's new book is called Waterfall, and she joined us this morning as our guest on Minnesota Reads.